the 58104's fastest growing podcast. It's the legend. And the loudmouth.
I do love it, Grant. You know I do.
No.
I do love L.A. It's time. Anywhere you are, by whatever method you are listening and socially distancing, we thank you for choosing this podcast. The Los Angeles Dodgers, champions of the baseball world. As predicted on this show by me, July 22nd, I said it. Dodgers would win the World Series. I know. You don't have to tell me how awesome I am. I know baseball. I know the game. And my boy is from L.A. Thanks to the Mookster. $365 million over 12 years. It's a world championship for the first time in 32 years for my adopted L.A. Dodgers. Your thoughts, Grant, on the champions of the baseball world.
Yay, should have done this 4 years ago. Yay! Seriously, you should have done this 3 years ago. I don't care.
Yes,
great,
you do.
You beat a team that beat itself.
Is that why you were jumping out of your chair when the Rays won game four to tie it up on the fielding debacle? Is that why you don't care, right?
Okay, here's the thing with this Dodger team.
Oh, strap in, everybody. Here we go. All right.
Like I said, the Yankees of the National League, you stockpile talent with unlimited cap space.
They've won one more championship than the Yankees have in the last 10 years doing that.
True, but you should have done this a while ago. I'm not you know, clapping for you because you finally won a World Series. You know what? The Astros cheated or what? It doesn't matter. You still should have beaten the Astros in that World Series. You should have beat the Red Sox in that World Series. You should have beaten the Nationals. Clayton Kershaw finally showed up after 4 years of postseason choking. Great. You finally won one. That's all I have to say about that.
So the Rays, despite Randy Arozarena trying to single-handedly carry the offense. And let's talk about the Rays, though, and the decision, of course, Grant, from Kevin Cash to pull Blake Snell, who is on a roll, gives up a cheap single, and it all goes downhill from there. It's easy to look and say in hindsight, this is the way they've done it all year, this is what they've always done, this is how we play. But man, it's so easy to second guess this decision. Wouldn't you want to die on the hill with your best pitcher?
Let's put it this way. If Kenta Maeda was having a great game, would you keep him in if he gave up a hit?
Yes.
Okay.
But here's the only thing I can think of. It's an elimination game. If you are wrong, you're done. And would you?
Well, he was wrong with the other decision. So
no disagreement. Given the numbers available, I wouldn't have done that.
But he went to his worst reliever.
Well, his argument.
He goes by analytics, but he's their worst. The guy they brought in, Johnson, he's their worst bullpen guy. According to his analytics, he's the worst guy. Why would you throw him on the mound when you could have gone to anybody else in that bullpen and it would have been better than the guy they brought in?
Well, I'm not convinced that I guess the modern day manager is more looking for a reason to take a guy out than leave him in, which I find very strange, don't you? I mean,
yeah, I do.
Everybody wants to be the analytics guy that figures out, oh, when I should pull a guy or pitch a guy, and the days of the guy working himself out of jams and everything else, they're
all gone. Past history, though. You should go with your gut feeling.
Okay,
gut
first of all, there is no other kind of history other than past history. You know that drives me crazy.
Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. Now, back to the discussion at hand. Go ahead.
Okay. If you've only given up two hits the whole game, and you know the Dodgers are praying for you to take Blake Snell out of the game.
Okay, and then second of all, just let me correct you on one other thing, though. Nick Anderson came in to pitch, not Johnson. It was Anderson. And Anderson has given up a run in, like, the last six appearances he's had.
No, that's okay.
I just want to make sure that we get the names right.
No, it was the same guy as my screw up his name, but it's just... He's your guy. Blake Snell's your guy. I would have him go until he says I don't feel real good about going another inning. I'd keep him out there for all nine innings if he was willing to stay out there. Like you can't. It's like pitchers can't go as long as Morris and Smoltz did back in '91. You can only go five innings. You can't finish the whole game. What if Tom Kelly took out Jack Morris? I mean, well, he had Rick Aguilera, but it's not like. He felt really good about himself. He wanted to keep going. Bobby Cox didn't have the guts to have to leave John Smoltz out there because he still was John Smoltz was he was proven, but he didn't have enough credibility with Bobby Cox to leave him out there.
Well, and at the end of the day, it's about also how you manage. And Tom Kelly was very much a player's manager.
And Kevin Cash plays scare with analytics.
And I'm not sure you'll see managers like that anymore. I don't think in the modern game. I don't think you can manage like that anymore. I think you have to be the analytics dude like Cash. I think you have to be, I think that's the kind of guy you have to be to get a major league job. And I think the problem now is that the analytics have shifted over to the pitching side worse than they have on the hitting side. Because I already hate shifts and I already hate
Shift is commonplace in the game now.
Well, I still hate it. I mean, it's like playing the four outfielder set and, you know, having all the guys on one side of the infield loading it up and daring the guy to hit the ball the other way. Because to me, that smacks of laziness as a hitter that I'm not a trained good enough hitter that I can, an obvious open area to hit the ball and I can't hit it over there. And teams are going to suffer from that for years to come. Because again, the analytics say it's just like in basketball, the three-pointer is better than the three-pointer from long distance is going to be better than the 15-foot jumper. The same thing with the three-run homer is going to be take the place of the bunt and the manufacturing of runs and everything else. But look at the Dodgers in this game. The two runs that mattered to win for the Dodgers were scored on a wild pitch and a fielder's choice. Okay? Wild pitch, fielder's choice. That won them the World Series. And yeah, Betts hit the homer in the top of the ninth, and that's great. But the runs that won them the World Series were on a wild pitch and a fielder's choice. And because Mookie Betts is the best player in baseball right now, also had something to do with that, too. No question about it. So I think you have to appreciate how good also that the Dodger bullpen was in this series. Where, and in game six, they go 7 1/3 innings and strike out 12 guys after, you know, their opener guy. I tell you what, for all the pitching that they have in Los Angeles, our boy Tony there. And his last name is escaping me. I'll get to it here. Tony Gonsolin didn't have a very good series. But fortunately, the rest of the bullpen, Floro, Wood, Baez, Gonzalez, Gratterall, the former twin, Jose Urias or Urias, whatever you pronounce it at, not to mention the fact that they were able to overcome their closer imploding in one game, and Jansen didn't pitch the rest of the series. Pretty nice deep bullpen that they have there, as opposed to the Rays, who... I know they can throw out their opener guys and everything else, but man, when you have a pitcher like Snell, I don't see how you don't leave him in that game. I just don't.
No, I picked the Rays to win this series because of their bullpen, but I didn't think it would implode as badly as it did in this series. I undervalued how good the Dodgers' starting in bullpen really was, and I thought that it would be enough that the Rays could overcome their bullpen and win the World Series, but. The Rays got as much as they could out of that team, and I don't know because this was a miracle run for them. I thought the Twins and the Astros, they had better talent than the Rays did. I think the Rays were a better knit group than the other teams. I thought the Yankees had better talent too. I thought the Yankees would beat the Rays anyways, but I give them all the credit they deserve for at least getting to the World Series.
I give you credit, though. You did pick in our predictions earlier. You did say it would be Dodgers over the Braves in the World Series. So, got to give you credit for that.
What did I say again? Sorry.
You said Dodgers, Braves, in the NLCS, and you said the Dodgers would beat the Braves. So, you were correct on that one.
What did I have? Did I have Twins over Yankees in the NLCS?
You did. I had the Nationals getting there, so what do I know? But one of the best lines you had in our preview was that something screwy will happen, like the Marlins will make the playoffs. Guess what? They did.
Wait, what?
You said the Marlins would make the... You said something screwy will happen, like the Marlins would make the playoffs. And they did.
Well, I was partially right.
They did.
But you will never hear me say Twins win a series on this program until they win a series.
Well, and the funny thing is, we both picked them to beat the Astros, so we had it exactly right. We just
I love the Twins like they're my own, but it's just they find ways with the great talent that they have. I think they're a top 10 most talented team in baseball right now. With the gobs of talent they have everywhere on that roster, you get Josh Donaldson to help you out even more. But of course, he's out for the postseason. Byron Buxton's hurt constantly. You can't get a consistent hitter across. And the Astros beat them in two innings. It's ridiculous how they're pitching.
Two games, you mean? Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the Twins just shrivel up in games that matter at this point. It's not a damn series anymore. It's right. Annoying.
Well, and this this will be a gamble for 2021 to see if they can rebound from that particular debacle.
The White Tower's really going to get better.
Well, you know, here's the thing that's going to happen, though. They're, you know, I think they'll re-sign Cruz.
I think that's a given.
They're going to need to see, you know, if at third base, if Donaldson, do they need somebody to, you know, do they need to, is Marwin Gonzalez enough, you know, to kind of keep the position hot?
They need better relievers. I think that's really what they're missing.
Well, and the other thing they need is Kirilloff, who came in the playoffs, and you know, he's your hitter. He's not your home run guy, and they need more of those type of guys. The Ariases, the Kirilloffs, the Royce Lewises, the guys that are coming up. They need to get these solo homers and turn them into 2 and 3 run homers. And I think
also the risk, the runners in scoring position, that's killed the Twins for years at this point.
Yep.
They can't get guys in times that matters. It seems like when we watch games, you know, on a night where if the Twins can't get anybody in, they're not going to win a game. If they have runners on with a nobody out, and against the Royals, they still can't manage to get a guy in. We look at each other like, this game's over. We're going to lose.
I think
on a night when the bats just go cold, they're just dead. They just can't. And their pitchers start get pressured, and then they start to give up hits. And you're like, what the heck? It's confusing how they squander talent and leads and guys on base as much as the Twins do.
Yeah. Well, we'll have plenty of time to talk hot stove baseball as we go through the winter and. Just for a couple other baseball notes before we leave the subject. Tony La Russa, you know how old he is? He's 206.
Isn't he like 76?
76, and he is going to handle the White Sox now, which is just fascinating. What?
How old's Grandpa again?
Grandpa's about to turn 76, yes. He'll be 76 this January, right.
So a grandfather is going to manage the White Sox.
Yeah, not the first Hall of Famer to come out of retirement and manage.
But Connie Mack?
Frank Robinson did, I believe. I'm missing a few there. And then A.J. Hinch looks like he is going to get the Tigers job after being tossed out of Houston. Looks like that'll happen with him. So La Russa joins a long list of guys who have come off the shelf. We all remember, of course, recently John Gruden coming back to coach. Joe Gibbs, if you remember, came back. He was gone for 12 years before he came back. You may recall Art Schell also pulled the same stunt 12 years apart coaching the Raiders. George Halas did it several times. And we obviously also remember Bud Grant coming and doing it for the Vikings.
It's not only for 1 year, though.
1 year, yep. Mike Brown did it. Remember that? Remember Mike Brown? He did it for the Cavs not too long ago.
Oh, yeah.
So, of course, and of course, Phil Jackson did it. We should also
know.
Don Nelson did it, if you remember back with the Golden State Warriors. John Gibbons, who manages the Blue Jays, he managed up until 08 and then came back in 13. Not as popular, of course. Then Bobby Cox. People forget before Bobby Cox had his big run with the Braves.
He was the GM.
He was a crap manager for a few years in there.
And he was the GM.
Right, and he was the GM.
And he was back in the dugout in 90, right?
86. He was the GM, right, in 86. And then he went back in 90. And then, of course, they, you know, had that epic series with the Twins. The all-time baseball guy for, of course, you know, leaving and coming back is unquestionably Billy Martin, who did it, what, four or five different times with the Yankees. So that's probably your biggest one. There are a few hockey guys that did it too, most notably Ken Hitchcock from the Dallas Stars.
No.
We're not talking hockey, okay. And then a recent example, Mack Brown from North Carolina, who was there till 97 and then came back, of course, here the year or so ago. And Bill,
being a broadcaster at ESPN when he covered a Bison game, believe it or not.
Right?
So.
And then Bill Snyder actually did it once before he retired. Left, came back, and then retired again.
Wasn't he the athletic director?
He was. And decided that it would be him. He was the best one for his job. So, there you go.
Was he like splitting duties then between athletic director and head coach? Or
I honestly don't know enough about his tenure to care. So
I don't either, so.
I don't remember. But anyway, just some other examples of guys that have left and come back after long stretches, and in this case, to the same franchises. It's kind of interesting. So, well, that puts a lid on the baseball season for the year. So we'll get back to those conversations. Hopefully, things will start on time, and we'll have a normal season next year. Maybe there won't be fans at the beginning of the year, but hopefully, they'll be playing a full schedule anyway. We'll see what happens in that respect, but. It is time, as we have gotten this far into the show, where we talk about the National Football League. A little slow there. As we speak, the Falcons and Panthers are engaged in a Thursday night duel here. And if you're not watching it, trust me, you're not missing exactly football on parade here. A rainy night as the remnants of a hurricane kind of rolling through the area, and it's rainy and wet, but neither team exactly distinguishing themselves. Right now, the Falcons with a slight lead in this one. We are both on the Panthers tonight, minus the one. We'll see how that turns out as the Falcons begin to drive inside the 35, and now they're in move inside the 20. So could be a pending score here for the ATL. See if they can bounce back after a Gurley gate from last week, which was absolutely a horrible experience. We start with the Sunday slate, and I am obligated by contract to mention that the Loudmouth has fallen behind in the pick standings. The Legend at 52-49-4, the Loudmouth at 51-50-4 through the first 7 weeks. One game back.
You look like the 2010s decade of Vikings, 500.
Above 500, my man, though. And you ain't much better.
Slightly.
So we'll see what happens as we go into the week gates.
Let's take it to Congress, folks. This man blew a 3-game lead in a span of, what, 2 weeks?
What's better is I'm going to win by at least 3 games at the end of the season. So that's what's going to be the best about this whole process. So.
Sure.
Let's go to the Sunday slate, my friend. Patriots at 2-4 travel to 5-2 Buffalo. The Bills, a 4-point favorite in this one with an over-under of 41. Grant, I don't think the Bills are in much of a mood to let this one get away. I think they feel this is probably the game that they've had circled and they're looking forward to in maybe putting the Patriots out of their misery. And boy, the Patriots did look miserable last week in that loss. I don't know if they have much going for them right now.
No, as your picks later, I will firmly pick Buffalo in this game. Buffalo, a top five defense in this league, they are dominating. I know they had a sluggish performance against the Jets,
to say the least.
Where Tyler Bass outscored the Jets 18-10, but I think that the Buffalo offense will bounce back in this game. It's Josh Allen, Stephon Diggs. They're still very potent on offense. I'll take Buffalo minus the four.
Yeah, I'll take Buffalo minus the four as well. I just don't have a good sense that the Bills are going to put them away by any stretch of the imagination.
It's Belichick. You won't let them slip away, though.
No, it's going to be a tough game, I think. I'm not so sure that the Bills will be able to score a ton, but I think they'll score enough. The over under has really gone. It was at 45 early in the week. It's down to 41. You know, I thought at 45 I would have taken probably the under, but I think I'm going to have to take the over at 41. Just think though, the Bills. When they don't score a lot, they don't score much. Past three games, they've only scored 51 points. They were averaging, like I said, over 30. Patriots, though, are worse. And they only got six when they got their ass waxed by the 49ers. They look like an offense that's in quarantine right now, to be quite honest with you. So I'm going to take the Bills as well. I'm going to take the over because it's at 41, but I'll take the Bills as well, minus the four. At home, we go to the Cincinnati area where the Titans travel to the Bengals. Titans 5-1, Bengals 1-5-1. The Titans a 5.5 point favorite in this one. The Bengals are 53.5 over under. Grant, the Bengals are certainly a team again that has flashed signs of growth, but I think they're a long ways away from being able to hang a four-quarter game with the Titans. What are your thoughts?
Or more than anybody. The Bengals, I think, they're a work in progress, as we all know. They have some weapons, let's put it that way, but I think Tennessee is going to want to take the bad taste out of their mouths from the Pittsburgh game that they felt they should have won. If Gostkowski makes that field goal, I think Tennessee would have gone down and scored in overtime and won the game. But I firmly believe that Tennessee is going to, I'm not going to say destroy Cincinnati, but I think they'll win by at least a couple scores. I'll take Tennessee.
Okay, take Tennessee minus the 5.5.
Minus the 5.5, and I think Cincinnati put up enough of a fight to make it the over, whatever the over is.
Yeah, it's 53.5 is the over, and that's come down a little bit. I like this line at 5.5. I think that's about right. I think the Titans are a touchdown better in this game. And so I think the money's good enough to take the Titans here on the road. I think they'll take this game into the fourth quarter. But ultimately, I just think the Titans have just too much. And I just keep thinking about Cleveland running the ball down Cincinnati's throat a bunch of times. And I think Derrick Henry will do the same thing to you, too. The Titans are going to be mad coming off that loss. And I don't think they're going to want to slip up here. So we'll agree on that game. Raiders and the Browns, this is an interesting one as the Raiders at 3-3 travel to Cleveland at 5-2. Line started out at 3, now it's down to 2.5 for the Browns, and that's what makes this an interesting pick. Now, part of the reason that game moved from a line, though, is because Odell Beckham Jr. now out for the year. They're without Nick Chubb, so they're down a few players now, Grant. But this is one that the Browns, playing at home, would seem to still be a slight favorite, and that's what they are. 2.5 with an over-under of 50.5.
This is a tough one for me to pick because I really like Cleveland. I really like Vegas. I think the way Vegas is playing is really, really well right now. I know they were in the Buccaneer game for three quarters.
Yeah, they got boat raced in the fourth quarter pretty hard against Tampa, but I think that's going to happen to a few teams this year.
Yeah, I think the Buccaneers are a whole other planet than everybody else. I'm tempted to take the Raiders just because I think that they're really improving, and I really like the Browns, but again, I don't have a great feeling about the Browns. I just don't, and until I see that, I'm taking the Raiders, and here's why I'm taking the Raiders. I like the Raiders because they have Josh Jacobs, and Derek Carr is having a really good season, and Darren Waller, I know he's inconsistent at times, but when he's on in the red zone, there's no stopping him. I like the Raiders in this game.
So you're going to take the Raiders plus the 2.5?
I'm taking the Raiders.
Okay, good. Then I'll take the Browns, minus the 2.5. I think if this number was 3...
I knew you would do that.
If the number was 3 or 3.5, I'd think probably right. And I know I'm hitching my wagon to Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, but you're hedging your bets on the Browns. Which makes me nervous. Until I see the Browns consistently put two good games together, I'm sticking the Raiders.
And this is the game that Baker Mayfield would screw up. If he has the propensity. So I'm going to take the chance that the Browns have figured out how to close these games out. And I'm going to gamble a little bit on Baker Mayfield here. And I know they won the Cincinnati game with the final seconds. They've got the confidence, maybe overconfidence. But I'm going to ride him here. That 2.5 number scares me. I think if it was 3 or 3.5, I might be with you. But 2.5, I think, is enough for me to pick the Browns. I'll take Cleveland minus the 2.5 and the over in this one. Colts travel to the Lions. This is an interesting game, not just because of the teams involved, but it's really a crossroads game, I think, for the Lions. This is a big chance for them to prove that they are going to be a factor in a playoff race. You know, if you look at the line here, it's moved up from 2.5 to 3, which is about right on the number, you would think. So the Colts on the road, a 3-point favorite. It's tough for me to pick Detroit in a scenario like this, Grant.
I can't pick Detroit. I don't trust Detroit. The Falcons blew another game. The Falcons should have won that game. The Lions got lucky, because you know once every decade the Lions get a good miracle in them. So yeah, I'm happy they won that game. But I think that with the Colts, they have one of the best rushing attacks in the league. It doesn't matter. I think that Jonathan Taylor's going to have one hell of a season. If Rivers avoids the interception and someone yells pull, I think he'll be okay. And the defense is still playing really well. They're to what top five defense league among points given up. They're top five fewest, I think. So, and I still like the Colts offense a lot. I think I'm going to take the Colts.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Colts too, and I'm going to take the under.
I can't hitch my wagon to Detroit. I just can't.
No, I agree. I think the Colts will come off and win this game. I'm going to go with you on that one. I'm going to take the Colts minus the 3. Not a lot of line movement from this one and earlier in the week. Indianapolis also coming off a bye, which is a big deal to me. Teams coming off byes. Obviously, I also have a lot more play, I think, in these kind of situations. So give me the Colts minus the 3. The biggest line of the year, Jets, 0-7 on the road at the 6-1 Chiefs. The Chiefs, as of this writing, or recording, 19.5 points. This game did reach into the 20s at one point early in the week. It opened at 21.5. Just seems like that's too much. So I think this is probably a closer number. I think the Chiefs are easily 3 touchdowns better than the Jets. And I think it will probably... If I was picking just a few games this week, I wouldn't bet this game. But
I would not.
Because of how this works, you know, and the Chiefs, again, 5-2 against the spread. They dominated Denver and under poor weather conditions. The other part of me says if the Chiefs get up big, does Mahomes come out like he did in this other game? And do the Jets get some garbage points? Problem is, the Jets are garbage all the time, not just in garbage time. Give me the Chiefs minus the 19.5. I'm going to take the over, though, because I think they'll probably score enough crapola points later in the game that it'll probably be something like 42-10. So I would take the over, and I'm taking the Chiefs. What are your thoughts?
Same thing you said. I'm taking the Chiefs. I'll take the 20. I'll take whatever the line is,
19.5.
Yeah, I'll take Kansas City. I think the Jets are a dumpster fire, and I think they'll take Lawrence in the draft, and they'll be happy with that. But I think the Jets will score enough pride points to make it look respectable. But it's not going to matter. The Chiefs are on a whole other galaxy compared to the Jets. The Jets are Kansas City.
That's about right. Rams at the Dolphins. This is an interesting game for a couple different reasons. One,
that was start.
Tua Tagovailoa will make his professional debut as a starting quarterback in this game. And that makes me a little nervous. The Rams are 3.5-point favorites, 46 over-under. I don't think this is going to be a particularly high-scoring game. You know, Miami is coming off a bye, which will help, and it's had given Tua the chance to work into this. But I think the Rams are going to make his life miserable. I think Aaron Donald in particular is going to make his life miserable. And I just don't think Miami, with an inexperienced rookie quarterback in his debut, and I know he's a phenomenal talent, but I just think the Rams are hitting that stride where they're going to be a playoff team, and games like this, playoff teams win against mediocre teams on the road. And I don't think that the Dolphins quite have the horses to pull this one off. Give me the Rams minus the 3.5 at Miami this week. Grant, what do you think?
I know I had my bets on the Dolphins one week and I was right. I'm not doing that this week. I think Aaron Donald's going to sit on Tua Tagovailoa the entire game. I think he'll have at least 3 sacks. Aaron Donald will sit on Tua. And I think Tua, like you said, I think he's a great talent. I think he's going to make some plays in this game that everyone's going to go, wow. But I look at Miami and I'm thinking, you're not a team that's going to beat the Rams. You're just not. You don't have the horses on defense to stop it down to stop a Goff in the offense. I think that the Rams will cover the spread with the over. I think that Tua will make enough plays to at least get it to the over.
Yeah, and I would ride the under on this one, just again with rookie quarterbacks. And if the Rams get ahead, they're going to take the air out of the ball and not give them a chance to beat them. So I think that's the way that one's going to go. Big matchup in the AFC North, Grant. The 6-0 Steelers, the last of the unbeatens, travel to Baltimore to take on the 5-1 Ravens. If I look at this game objectively, I don't think there's any reason why you would take the Ravens here, take the Steelers here. A road team with a propensity to turn the ball over, and especially turning the ball over against this group, that's going to be fatal. I think the Ravens, coming off a bye, run the ball down their throats. I don't think they're going to blow them out, but I think they are going to be the clear winner in this game. I'm not sure, though. You know, part of me just says that if the Ravens get down, that's when they fall into trouble. But the Steelers turn the ball over so much and don't take care of it very well that I just think that's going to be their undoing. I guess to me, I look at this and the line right now is 4. It was at 6, but I feel a lot better with the Ravens as a 4-point favorite. Not enough for me to take the Steelers on the road in this spot. This is probably the classic series, I think, where each team wins on each on their home field. So give me the Ravens here, minus the 4 and the under, because I think they're going to try to take the air out of the ball and grind out a win here. What are your thoughts on this AFC North club?
I really want to pick Pittsburgh because I just think that their defense has been really, really good, and their offense has been really good. But the Steelers have only beaten one good team in Tennessee, and who knows,
that should have gone to overtime.
They should have lost that game. I really like Pittsburgh. Roethlisberger is having a great comeback season. But, well, like you said about Baltimore, if Baltimore can stay up and take the air out of the ball, like you said, Baltimore's hard to beat if they stay ahead of you. If they stay at least 3 points ahead of you, it's hard to catch them because this Lamar, a great talent as he is, if they keep running the ball the way they do, I don't know how you can stop them. Unless you outscore them or you get up by 2 scores on them, the Ravens can always come back on you. I'm taking Baltimore. And I'm taking the under as well because this game will be a slow-paced game. It's like watching two triple option teams go at it. The game will end in about 2 hours.
Well, I disagree with that because I think Pittsburgh will throw it a lot more than you think.
They'll throw it more, but they still run the ball. They still run the ball a lot, too.
We'll see. If they get behind, they're certainly not going to go to the running game. The Ravens need to stay ahead because that is just so critical for them. If they don't maintain a lead, as great an athlete as Lamar is, he's just not going to be able to bring him back with an accurate passing game. It's just not happening. And I fear that the Ravens are going to just take the air out of the ball and smash and run, and that's going to be all she wrote. And that's, I think they'll win it by a touchdown at least, but it's going to be the classic Baltimore-Pittsburgh you know, kick each other in the nuts. Yeah, kick each other in the nuts kind of game repeatedly. By the way, Teddy Bridgewater just took an absolute shot and is now out of the game as the Panthers are running double reverse end around fun. And they're running, who's the kid, Walker? The is that PJ Walker from the XFL is now at the controls.
You would be correct.
Running the show here in what has now turned into quite the driving rain in Carolina. Nothing could be finer than being in Carolina, but Walker now running the show. PJ Walker of Temple University fame running the offense right now for the Panthers in a pouring rain, trying to bring his team from behind. Our pick here could be in a little bit of jeopardy, Grant, as we go into that. Speaking of jeopardy, the Denver Broncos were in a lot of it last week, getting their ass handed to them pretty hard by the Chiefs. And now the Chargers come to town. The Chargers -3 against the Broncos. No over-under yet on this game yet. Grant, Justin Herbert continues to impress me with everything he does on the field for a guy of his stature. And I think the first time I really thought he could play at the professional level was that Rose Bowl where he ran in a bunch of touchdowns, and an element to his game we hadn't seen. He's a big, tough guy. Throws the ball beautifully. He's got that it factor. All the things that Drew Luck and every other quarterback on the Bronco roster don't have. The Chargers are -3 on the road here. This is gimme, gimme, gimme all day long. Heck, and especially since they ran the Easton Stick package, I am totally on board. Chargers are better than their record indicates. They may not challenge this year for a playoff spot, but they're getting there. Give me the Chargers -3 on the road against the Broncos.
Here's the problem with the Broncos. Not only do they have a lot of injuries, Jerry Jeudy's pretty inconsistent. They can't really get their running game going. But it's just because with John Elway's the GM, he likes his tall, white quarterbacks. Why, I don't know. He's trying to find Peyton Manning 2.0. And he tries to find it with Drew Lock and Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian and all these guys that haven't done a damn thing in the NFL. And it's just, I thought Drew Lock was the answer at the beginning of the season. They were my dark horse AFC Championship game contender. They're not. They're nowhere near it. I think that the Chargers, I told you Herbert would be a bust. I'm clearly wrong on that statement. He's a really, really good. And I totally underestimated how good he could really be. And the more I saw the Hard Knocks, the more I liked him, and the more that Herbert showed me how good he can be, a really good passer. And I look at Herbert and I'm thinking he's going to be really good in the future. I'll take the Chargers I'll take the Chargers.
Okay, Chargers -3.
I was going to say if it's over-under, but there isn't one. So
no, there isn't one right now, so that's off the board at this point.
They're kind of stalled there.
It's 44.5 if you care. I probably would take the over on that one myself.
Broncos are enough points.
Saints and the Bears, the Saints... Here you've got two teams that just don't look quite right, and they just underwhelm, I think is the best word I can use for that. This game actually started out about with a two-point line, and it's expanded just a little bit now, and most of that, I believe, is because Michael Thomas looks like he will play, and I think that will be a huge boost to this offense, because part of the issue that the Saints have is they just don't get vertical with the ball. And I'm not sure. Yeah, and I'm not sure if Thomas is that much of an influence on that.
I think Drew Brees lost some arm strength too, which doesn't help.
Well, I was going to say age probably has something to do with that, but they also don't have a genuine vertical threat that they can free up, and that makes it difficult to stretch teams to stretch teams down the field when you don't have anybody that can open that line up. And as for the Bears, man, the Bears look terrible on Monday night, and I don't think
it's a real team,
right? And I don't think looking. This is another one of these games for the Bears where they're going to have to prove it to me. I don't think 4.5 is too bad a line to take here. I'm going to take the Saints. I'm going to take a -4.5 because I just absolutely, and I'm going to take the over at 43.5 too. It's just these two teams underwhelm me, but I think in the end the Saints might have enough more to do it, because the Bears underwhelm me even more than anybody. So forget it. I'm gonna take the known commodity and take the Saints -4.5.
I like the Saints. I think the Saints are really inconsistent right now. That's pretty clear, because Drew Brees has lost some arm strength. Michael Thomas with injuries and contract detrimental to the team and all sorts of other crap he's done. He's just another diva wide receiver. He's like Terrell Owens 2.0. He tells you what he wants when he wants it. But I just think...
He'll come out motivated in this game, is what I think.
He will. That's very true. But I think I'm going to take the Saints because I think that the Bears, they need to prove it to me, as you said. They haven't. One time they played a real team, they got destroyed. So I need to see them play somebody worth a damn and beat them before I can really put stock into Chicago.
49ers at the Seahawks. This is a 3-point favorite for the Seahawks here. The Niners. Again, continue to hang on. This one was at 3.5. It's moved to 2.5. Now it's at 3, which I think is about right. So essentially a pick'em game. And in a pick'em game, the team with the best quarterback and the team that's at home is winning. That's Russell Wilson in this case. I don't think the Niners can hang with the wide receiving core that the Seahawks have. I don't think that the Seahawks, even though they lost that game in overtime, are going to have too much of a hangover from that. I think they're going to be anxious to come out and prove that they're still the best team in the NFC West. Give me the Seahawks minus the 3 hosting the 49ers. 53.5 is the over-under. I will take the under. I don't think the 49ers can score that much. Although it is a Seattle defense. So, you know what? I'm going to change that. I'm going to take the over. I just remembered it's Seattle playing defense here. So, I like the over. But I'm taking the Seahawks minus the 3.
I like the 49ers. I think what they did to the Rams was impressive. But I just don't think, and plus with Mostert being out again, and they don't have a true wide receiver. They're inconsistent at wide receiver. And you feel like they should be trading for one at the trade deadline, getting Gallup from Dallas or something like that, because they need help on the perimeter. I think Brandon Ayuk's a special talent. He's been really good this season. But if you're relying on Kendrick Bourne and guys that you've never heard of, I don't know what you're relying on. Garoppolo is going to have, he has Kittle, and that's about it. I mean, their offensive line's pretty decent, but they don't have they're relying on Jerick McKinnon, who hasn't been good in 3 years. So I'm going to have to take Seattle because I think the Seahawks offense will be pissed, I think, because they lost in that Cardinal game. They're going to come out and they're going to score at least 35 points in this game. I'll take it Seattle.
In a game that is being played because it has to be, the battle for the NFC East. Cowboys 2-5 at the Eagles 2-4-1. Eagles minus 9 on the board right now. This line has gone early from Eagles minus 3.5, which was before the injury. Now, of course, with Ben DiNucci of JMU fame at the controls, DiNucci, we now have, of course, the classic battle of NDSU quarterback versus James Madison quarterback. We all know who wins these games in big spots. It isn't close. It isn't close who the best quarterback in this game is or the best FCS program is. It's also very clear that the man wearing number 11 and wearing green is going to own DiNucci's ass. Give me the Eagles minus the 9. I couldn't be rooting more for Wentz in any game since his days at NDSU than I am to put down... all the JMU fans, oh, quarterback starting in the NFL, and they get a big chubby about that. Screw them. Screw them. They're going down. Eagles cover and get the over and take a commanding, chuckle, lead in the NFC East. Grant, what do you think on DiNucci? What do you think on DiNucci versus Wentz?
I think the Cowboys would be down by so much. They're going to need Brian Shore to quite lock him and try to save him because that's all they really. Because, you know, Brian Shore, the little quarterback who's got to beat the Bison, you know. But, you know, it doesn't matter. He still lost his stick, anyways, the next year. But I like Wentz. And Wentz wills his team to win. So that's something that I don't think Ben DiNucci or anybody or Cooper Rush or whoever the hell the quarterback is, Quincy Cardback by the locker room at some point. I just don't know how to feel about Dallas because Dallas, they have all the offensive weapons you could dream of. They have some defensive stars, but they're not a great team. They complain about their coaching staff. They're open to the media. Jerry Jones is complaining to the media. The Cowboys are all flash. We all know this. And at some point, you need to be like, maybe this isn't working. Maybe we need to rebuild. And Jerry will refuse to do that, obviously. But I'm going to take the Eagles just to push them further, just to push the Cowboys further into their despair of nothingness. I'll take the Eagles and the 9 points.
All right, sounds good. And we wrap it up with Monday night. The Bucks, a 12-point favorite over the Giants. I don't think much needs to be said here. The Bucks again are my Super Bowl pick, and I'm going to ride them. And they certainly aren't losing to this motley crew of Giants, even if it's on Monday night on the road. I think Brady does enough to win this game. He's far better than Daniel Jones. 12 points doesn't scare me here. The Bucks are easily 2 touchdowns better. Give me the Bucks minus the 12. No over-under that I saw on this one yet, Grant. I'll look it up as we go, but what do you think of this one?
This is a game where I think that Brady is just going to pick apart a defense. This is one of those games where he does that.
And 46 is the over-under, if you care.
Was it 46?
Yeah, 46.
Doesn't really matter what it is. I think the Tampa will cover. They might score 2/3 of the points to get to the over. But the Giants, I mean, they're getting better every week. I think that's pretty clear because they're hanging with teams. They just can't close the door and win games. I think Joe Judge. I think the players really like him. I think they're rallying around him. But I just think that rallying around doesn't mean you win games, and then they're an okay team, but they're still improving, and they're in the middle of a rebuild. So I'll take TB12 and the Tampa Bay Gronkowskis.
Sounds good, and that concludes our look at Week 8 in
Minnesota.
Oh yeah, you know what? It's so bad.
It's so forgettable.
It's so bad. I almost forgot to pick the game. That's how pathetic it is.
Can we just pick Packers and move on? Because I really want to talk about this game.
Yeah, and I don't really want to either.
A-Rod's going to throw for 500 yards. Devonta Adams will have 200 yards receiving. They'll beat us 42-17. I mean, that's what this game's going
to
be.
I think we're both going to be. I mean, honestly, I hate to
pick
talk
Packers
about
Packers next segment.
I hate to talk about the Vikings, but it's just that they get Dalvin Cook back. They are coming off a bye. Is there any hope here? The line, just for the record, Packers.
It doesn't matter what your name is.
Packers -6.5 with a 50.5 over under. It's going to be the over because the Vikes will score plenty in garbage time. I think the Packers will score plenty of points before garbage time.
And also, it's at Lambeau, and Kirk's never wanted Lambeau, so I'm just
going to. Kirk's got a big tie in Lambeau. At least he's got that going for him. So, yes, Vikings minus.
The tank for trade begins.
Packers -6.5 for both of us in this one, as much as we hate to talk about it. So Packers -6.5 in the over. And that concludes week. I had done all the professional games for the week. That's more of an amateur game that we're going to watch out of the Vikings this weekend, I'm afraid. But we'll see what happens. Maybe the surprise of the year will happen. And I wouldn't, you know.
Doubt it.
It's not out of the realm of possibility the Vikings could win, but let's be honest. We all know how this one's going to end anyway. Now, let's get to the collegiate ranks. Not exactly a good slate. However, some intrigue has popped up tonight. Trevor Lawrence of the number one ranked Clemson, the signal caller, who is widely expected to be a future New York Jet, perish the thought. He should play another year. Wait for somebody else to suck worse.
He should. That's very true. Well, the Jets will be the number one pick next year, too, so right. Who cares?
So Lawrence will not play this weekend against Boston College. Now, again, that should be.
That really matters.
Clemson was a 30-point favorite going into this game. I doubt that'll come down a lot. But, just saying, you also have to look at a week ahead because guess which game lies ahead next Saturday?
Notre Dame.
And that could be a little more important if Lawrence isn't.
I assume Clemson, even if Trevor wasn't playing.
I assume Lawrence will be cleared to come back and play in that game. But the intrigue exists now, a little bit at least, for next week. We'll see what happens. As far as this week goes, I don't think they're going to have any trouble. Not a very good college slate this weekend. In fact, there's only one game between ranked opponents. And that's the Ohio State Buckeyes traveling to Happy Valley to play number 18 Penn State. The Buckeyes, who took a little bit of time to get going against Nebraska, but then disposed of them rather easily. Penn State coming off that absolutely heartbreakingly awful loss to the Indiana Hoosiers. I really did say that. Any chance Penn State goes hold serve at home and wins this game? I don't think so.
It's Saturday Night Football, of course, on ESPN, because if Ohio State ever goes to Happy Valley, that's always a Saturday Night Football game. It's always the whiteout game.
Well, the problem is there's going to be nobody there to white out.
Exactly.
So
Ohio State's going to white out the Penn State secondary. Justin Fields is having one hell of a season. That's only with one game, but he played really well against Nebraska, and I can't take Penn State seriously if you get beat by Indiana. Unless Bob, that was on the sideline. I don't really know how they won that game. They was throwing chairs at referees. But all I'm saying is I think Ohio State, at the end of the season, it's going to come down to what order do you put Bama, Clemson, and Ohio State in. And four is going to be, a mixture of Notre Dame, Cincinnati, Georgia, something like that. But I'm interested to see how many points Justin Fields can put on Ohio State and can put on Penn State.
Yeah, Minnesota travels to Maryland. It's a Friday night Big Ten affair. Nobody cares about that game. The Gophers are fraudulent. We all know this. Maryland is horrible, so I don't think there's much of a game there. Most of the rest of the college slate this weekend is a bunch of there's a couple interesting games. Kansas State is at West Virginia. That might be an interesting game. West Virginia is actually favored in that one. Not a lot of SEC games, though, of any note going on. And pretty slow weekend here as we kind of rumble towards the Pac-12 schedule and get those guys involved. But it's going to be pretty quiet on the college front this weekend, except for a couple of those games that we just mentioned. So, most importantly, this is a big weekend, and even though there won't be any trick-or-treating going on, it's Halloween weekend, of course, which means we get to drag out some fun musical interludes for the show. And, you always got the good ones, the classic ones. Absolutely. This is an oldie but a goodie. It's been around for forever. This is Boris Pickett, or Bobby Pickett, and the Crypt Kickers, by the way. My old man will love this one. Classic version. He did the mash. He did the monster mash. Yes, and of course, there's not many Halloweens that can go by without hearing this. Most popular song of all time, Thriller, of course, Michael Jackson. A little more modern one that most people still know to this day.
Ghostbusters!
The immortal Ray Parker Jr. behind the lyrics on this one. Grant, who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
Then, of course, there's, just for your classic Halloween or spooky scene of any kind. The Twilight Zone theme, of course, there, but what? Oh, yeah, you're too young to care about that. But anyway, back to our Halloween theme. But as, of course, this being the era of COVID, it's going to be tough to go out and get any trick-or-treat candy.
And us being lovers of food, this is pretty easy.
It is, so we're just going to have to go buy the Costco bag, I think, and probably get through it. But,
yes,
to make sure
yes,
we
please,
keep...
Please do that,
we,
please.
To me, we
please.
need to keep the spirit of the Halloween alive, so we have decided here for the last few minutes of the show...
I have honorable mentions, too, in case you're wondering.
...to conduct the first annual Legend in a Loudmouth Halloween candy draft. I should have gotten the music queued up here for that. But Grant, we are going to do, and we got a few minutes left of the show, but we're going to do the Halloween candy draft. We'll try to get through a few rounds of this here as we go, but no rules or restrictions as to what you can pick. All you have to know is what is in the candy bag. What do you want to reach in and find at the end of the night? When you are unloading the candy bag is what we are trying to come up with here and see if that is something that we agree or disagree on. So without further ado, that wasn't loud enough. Let me try that again. The candy draft pick, the first round selection for you
with the first pick in the first annual Legend of Loudmouth Podcast candy draft, the grand legends like Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Can't go wrong with that. Solid selection.
Also, well, for the people, the Grand Legend is my fantasy football name, so for anything it is. But let's be honest, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups is the best candy of all time, and there's no disputing that.
Hard to argue with that from my point of view, of course. I definitely can't argue with that. That's a very solid selection. That is very, you know, like, that's like taking your bookend offensive tackle for the next 10 or 15 years.
Are you like the Mel Kiper? You're judging every pick?
Breaking down each pick. With the first pick from the second overall selection, however, the Mark Loudmouths. We will select the Kit Kats, ladies and gentlemen. We're going Kit Kat with our top selection. The classic wafer with the chocolate, and the nice thing is you can break yourself off a piece of that Kit Kat bar, so you don't have to eat the whole thing at one time. So, again, solid selection there. That's like getting your first round wide receiver, you know, the guy that's going to get consistently like 90 catches a year and 1,000 yards. You just really can't go wrong with the Kit Kats as our number two selection in the Legend of the Loudmouth Candy Draft. Grant, you're on the clock for pick number three.
With the third overall pick, the Grand Legends select Starburst.
Wow. See, you snuck in on me that one, because that was going to be in my five.
I love the Skittles, the Starburst, you name it. You name the fruit candy, I like it.
Well, and that ties into mine, because the next pick I'm going to make is going to be Skittles, because to me there's just, and this, by the way, we're covering all varieties. We're not going like Tropical Burst, Starburst, or Sour Skittle. This covers all varieties of Skittles. Okay.
I heard this theory once that if you have a Skittle and then plug your nose and taste it, they all taste the same.
True, but here's the only thing.
I actually did that once, and it's actually true. Like, if you just plug your nose, they all taste the same. It's weird.
Here's the thing about the Starburst, though, and that's the only reason I had it down on my draft board a little bit.
About Skittles, sorry.
right. No, but here's why Starburst dropped on my draft board into the lower part. It takes some work. Okay, you gotta unwrap all the little shitty Starbursts.
The wrapping is edible.
And it's tough. Seriously, you must be.
Yes, it is. The wrapping is edible. I swear to God, it's edible.
You must be my son. But anyway, now that they've made the chewy ones where you don't have to unwrap them anymore, now that's definitely a little bit of a boost on my board. But so anyway, we're going. So we went Starburst with the three, Skittles with the four. Back to you for your the fifth overall pick.
The fifth overall pick, the Grand Legends select Three Musketeers.
And some people will mock you for that choice. Oops.
What?
Well, it's perceived that the nougat's kind of a downer for some people.
No, I have Milky Way on my honorable mentions list. I did ask you if they were technically in the same category, and you said no.
They're not. They're different. Three Musketeers have nougat. Milky Way has caramel. That's the difference.
Milky Way has caramel in it. They both have nougat. And
they don't have... No. Three Musketeers is a whole different level of nougat. You know this.
Oh, come on!
You know... You look at the inside of the bar, for Christ's sake.
Have.
Oh, come on, Grant. Seriously. We're going to open these up, and we're going to have a discussion about this on Halloween, because there's no way you can compare the two. They're just different. Plus, the Musketeers have that kind of... That shell caves in. The Milky Way, you got to work at that one a little bit, man. You got to work at that one just a little bit. I'm sorry. You just got to. So, for the next pick, I'm going to take, just to make sure that it's on the board, I'm taking the Milky Ways. Because, again, I'm a big Milky Way.
That's an honorable mention for me, as well as Kit Kat. Those are my two honorable mentions I have for now.
So, Milky Ways definitely have to be on the board. We got two more picks to make, Grant, so I will leave it to you now. We are at pick number seven.
Seventh overall pick. The Grand Legend select Haribo Gold Bears.
Oh, if you would have told, if I'd have known that, I'd have had the Haribo jingle ready to go here. That's...
Yeah, I am a gummy bear lover. I'm a gummy anything lover. That's why in our studio there's a 5-pound box of Love Legends mix sitting in our studio. I'm a big lover of chewy candies, and then that's at the top of the list. They taste so good.
There we go. Had to pull that one out of the jingle bank.
Oh, you know.
So the Haribo gummy bears go in there at number 7. At number 8, I'm going to take the classic, and again, it covers all the varieties, but the Tootsie Roll is the quintessential candy. It's like if they told you to take the bowl, you reach in a big handful and you pull out a bunch of those. That is good stuff.
I like those, but I like the fruit flavored ones.
Well, that's fine. That covers all varieties there.
Okay, good. That's fine then. I like those. Those are good.
You're good with that?
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah. So we'll make Tootsie Rolls the number 8 selection in this one. And your final selection of the draft here with the 9th pick of the draft.
This might surprise you, but with my last pick in this draft, I select Snickers.
That is. I had to play the sound effect twice. I was so surprised. Really, right?
I'm not a big nut person, as you know.
You are a nut person, no question.
Well, I don't like peanuts or cashews, that kind of stuff. But the way they mix the caramel and the chocolate, so it's like they just sneak the nut in there. It's like I like it because I can hardly taste it, and it tastes like a peanut butter when you chew on it.
For the last pick of the draft, I'm going with a classic. If I could get the sound effect to work, I'll have to turn this sound off for a moment. But classic pick for the final win of the draft. Here we go.
The Charlie Brown and Snoopy
well,
Show.
After the Tootsie commercial here. Here we go.
Mr. Turtle, how many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop?
I never made it without biting. Ask Mr. Owl.
Mr. Owl. How many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop?
Let's find out.
Here we go.
1, 2, 3.
How many licks does it take to get to the Tootsie Roll Center of a Tootsie Pop? The world may never know.
And there you go.
Have you heard the Family Guy sketch of a Stewie doing the Tootsie Roll?
I didn't know if I could play that on the air given the circumstances,
true.
So I did.
But I have some honorable mentions. Make sure of those real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah, I think I'm surprised since we have one sitting in the studio, you didn't take that.
Hershey's Cookies and Cream Bar.
Ugh, okay, I'm not
come on,
not,
man,
no.
That's fantastic.
No, I don't think so. Okay, and your last one?
I have two more. 100 okay. Grand.
Yes, very good choice. Highly underrated. Yep.
And finally, our favorite box candy of all time, Mike and Ike's.
We have to because we have to play for them every year in the bowl in the bowl challenge. So my honorable mentions, of course, always involve lemon drops.
I like them to an extent. If they're like, what's the brand called that makes those, like the really good ones?
Like the lemon heads, you mean? Or,
Yeah. I like the chewy ones. Those are really good. I told you before the show, you put something lemon in there. You did.
And then the other one that's highly underrated is the Charleston Chew. I am a big Charleston Chew guy. Yeah.
I've never had one, so I can't tell if that's good or bad.
What do you mean you've never had one?
I've never had one. Sorry.
I think that's my failure as a father right there. I'm going to have to get you a Charleston Chew.
It's Halloween. Can you guarantee me at Halloween that's happening?
Well, we're going to have some kind of Halloween. I'm not sure where or what or how it's going to happen, but there's going to be
candy in the house.
There's going to be candy, and of course, as a diabetic, I know I'll be all over that. Like a dog on a three-legged cat.
Just no grapefruit.
Right. No grapefruit. That's my kryptonite is the grapefruit. Absolutely. So, we've gone way over time. The candy draft went better than I expected. So hey, we want you to get in touch with the show. Our email is legendintheloudmouth@gmail.com. That's legendintheloudmouth@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @LegendLoudmouth. That's @LegendLoudmouth. And check out our website at legendintheloudmouth.com. That's legendintheloudmouth.com for links to all of our previous shows. Grant, how do we find you?
Follow me on Instagram, Snapchat, @GrantLegend1. Follow me on TikTok, @GrantLegend. Or follow us on Instagram, @Legend_Loudmouth_Pod. That's @Legend_Loudmouth_Pod. Demons, if you like the show, we are curious. Demons, please, and subscribe to our YouTube channel.
We are coming up on the end of October. It's been a blast. We hope you guys have a very happy and safe Halloween out there. Certainly things with COVID are getting a little antsy in our part of the world here in the 58104. So want to make sure you all stay safe. Behave yourselves out there over Halloween. Don't get into too much trouble. I'm done talking to you for the night anyway. So, thanks for listening to us. We will see you on the other side in November. It's the Legend and the Loud One.